for argument is McKinney v. the Sheriff's Office of Whitley County. Mr. Begler?
Thank you, Tom. Robert Owen Begler on behalf of Mr. McKinney. What we dealt with in the district court opinion, as you all know, was a Ortiz issue. Ortiz was issued about 10 days into my briefing and was issued about 85 days before the district court opinion. However, the district court opinion in its wording at page 8 of its opinion sought to dwell upon direct or circumstantial evidence of discrimination and provide a indirect evidence through the McDonnell-Douglas framework. To succeed under direct method, McKinney must offer either direct evidence that would prove the question in fact without reference or inference or presumption, or a convincing mosaic of circumstantial evidence. And as members of this court, you well know that Ortiz indicated that any district court opinion that treats the phrases legal requirement is subject to summary reversal. So I tried to put some meat on this bones. What did that mean as a practical matter? There was a Hyde decision. There was a Smart decision after Ortiz. And there was a David decision after Ortiz. But I went to the district court, and there were two district court opinions that said, what does this really mean? What does Ortiz really mean? Ortiz means that, as in Tucker versus Palos Community Hospital, that McDonnell Douglas is not the only way to assess circumstances. It went on to state that the court will, after looking at McDonnell Douglas, the court will then assess cumulatively all the evidence presented by the plaintiff to determine whether it permits a reasonable fact finder to determine that this termination is attributable to the prohibited discriminatory category. Then I went to Tucker versus THC, and what did I find? These cases are both in late March of 2017. McDonnell Douglas is still a valid but non-exclusive method for proving Title VII claim. How it says, after you get done with McDonnell Douglas, ultimately the court will focus on the more general inquiry of whether a reasonable jury could find that the kindred terminated her employment because of her race. That indicates to me, once you look at the practical applications through Ortiz, Hyde, and Smart, Tucker, and the other case I cited, that in fact the district court missed proving or missed analyzing the evidence pursuant to three Seventh Circuit cases.
Mr. Begler?
Yeah.
The district judge criticized you for apparently failing to present evidence in a clear way. I looked at the summary judgment papers, and as I see it, you submitted both the brief and the statement of genuine issues, right?
That's right.
With specific citations to the evidence rebutting the, and in fact undermining the rationales offered for Mr. McKinney's dismissal.
That's true.
Right? You were not leaving the district judge to an unguided trek in the wilderness of evidence.
No, in fact, Northern District Local Rule 56.1 says I have to submit the material facts that support my statement of genuine disputes. I laid out with affidavits, answers to interrogatories, and exhibits all of the dispute, how I disputed to show how that could not be an honestly held belief of the sheriff. And so I was at a loss as to why the district judge said he was trying to search for nuggets, or he wasn't supposed to root around for, like a pig rooting around for facts, because I followed the district rules and those facts were repeated in the statement for genuine disputes, and they were also set forth in the brief filed in the district court.
Can I ask you about one of the specific facts here that I guess I'm still mulling over a little bit, and that is the evidence that Sheriff Hodges recommended to Mr. McKinney that he go see the movie 42?
Yes, he did.
Could you comment on what do you think the significance of that is?
Well, the significance was he was basically telling, well, obviously, as you well know from the briefing, there had never been an African-American hired by the Whitley County Sheriff's Department. So apparently Sheriff Hodges thought that since the Jackie Robinson, which is recently celebrated, I think the 75th year of it, he apparently wanted him to understand that there may be some kind of atmosphere, negative atmosphere, for an African-American being a merit patrol. And so the district court didn't seem to put much credence in any of this, especially the comments when the deputy tells the waitress, another deputy, I like my coffee like my partner black, and things like that, that I think the sheriff, and as you know, and I argued it in the brief and did it in the statement of genuine disputes, all the district judge did was say, if the sheriff said X, and it's a one-sentence thing, then the district judge said, okay, I accept that as being true. Yet, I put in exhibits. Take, for example, the transport issue. They baldly state, the sheriff baldly states, he never completed that transport. That is absolutely not supported in the record. Exhibit 1 and 2 in his deposition show the completed transport records. The affidavit of McKinney shows that he completed the transports, but the sheriff said, oh, you didn't do it.
The problem, as I see it, Mr. Vegler, is that we have a lot of cases that say when an employer is entitled to make honest mistakes in evaluating an employee's performance. And a disagreement does not necessarily support an inference of unlawful intent. Am I correct in understanding your case is, in essence, that your evidence goes way beyond honest disagreement?
That's
and
right.
In fact, contradictions of earlier practices and assertions made to your client about how he should perform.
Yeah, and in fact, in two of the contradictions show that their answers to interrogatories under oath said there is no standing operating procedure, but the sheriff says there is a standing operating procedure, and you mix it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I went back because I'm constantly stunned at the fact that we're not going to act as a super personnel department. Okay, that's fine. But if you look at Dale, which is the 1986, and I call it the bellwether case, it kind of started this all, and you look at the 14 or 15 cases that followed Dale, every one of them says that whatever your criticism of the employee has to be factually based, and you have to honestly believe that is a failure to meet legitimate job expectations. Every one of those cases says the employer has to honestly believe it. Now, you may make mistakes, and they use a lot of great language. It could be foolish, it could be trivial, it could be mistakenly held, it could be poorly founded, etc. But you can't avoid, the sheriff can't avoid the fact that his own SOPs don't support him. And they only took false work hours, gasoline credit card, and monthly report. The monthly report, there is no SOP that says how you turn a monthly report when you're at the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy. Well, that's great. As soon as he found out he turned one in from Deputy Sheriff Gatton, he turned one in within an hour. Now, the gasoline issue, we laid it out for you. You can't get to Plainfield and back and fuel up in Whitley County unless you want your car to be sitting on next to I-69 somewhere without a gas. And then the false work hours, well, what do we have? McKinney asked the administrative assistant sheriff, how do I do it? She told him, put in 10 hours a day. He talked to Deputy Sheriff Gatton, put in 4 days, 10 hours each. That's what he did. What's he do? That's one of the three criticisms for him to be terminated.
Didn't the sheriff himself text back that was the way to do it?
No, his administrative assistant did, and Chief Deputy Gatton did.
Were any of the white officers fired or disciplined for for violations similar to his?
We set forth in the record there were three Merit Patrol deputies at the ILA that did the same thing that McKinney did, and none of them got disciplined or reprimanded or even verbally warned. None of them.
Well, have white officers ever been fired by the sheriff's office?
Well, they set forth a group of white officers, and I claim they're irrelevant, but let's go to that point. This is a Merit Patrol deputy. All the officers, except one, that they said were disciplined were either custodial officers, confinement officers, or dispatch officers. They are not Merit Patrol deputies. They are not out on the road arresting people. So if you look at a comparable issue, they're not comparable from day one. They're sitting around in the jail. That's the point there. I don't think it's relevant. They also brought up a number of deputies that supposedly were fired, and that's the point you reached right there. They're not comparable from the get-go. So what do you do? Any reasonable juror cannot believe that the sheriff, who submits an affidavit with a bunch of one-liners in it, all of a sudden, there's no documents, there's no affidavits, there's no exhibits, there's nothing supporting these one-line statements from the sheriff that says Mr. McKinney failed to meet legitimate job expectations. So no reasonable juror could miss the elephant in the room by saying, my gosh, this, he can't honestly believe this. It just is impossible. Now, just as a little sidelight, the sheriff, they rely so much on the one hire fire rule. I'm not a big believer in that, but that's left.
Well, this court has said that's a matter for a jury argument, not as a matter of law in the Perez case.
Yeah, but it kind of assigns a kind of a presumption to it. I think there's some presumption language in there. I may be wrong.
Some of the older language from our opinion says that. It's pretty clear that that's something for the jury to decide.
So the smart thing is, if you don't hire McKinney, you get sued for failure to hire because of discrimination. If you hire him, to the extent the old cases, as you have pointed out, say there may be some kind of slight presumption, heck, you ratchet yourself up to a better legal position. In any event, I think, quite frankly, we've hit upon the major points. I can't think of anything else between your questions. And
that sounds okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay,
Baylor.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Douglas. Ms. Havanath?
Good morning, Your Honors. I guess I'll start with Ortiz, because the district court did not cite Ortiz, that's correct, but the ultimate conclusion that the district court correctly reached was that the entire sum total of the evidence showed that Mr. McKinney had failed to prove an intent to discriminate on the part of the sheriff. The court did go through the McDonnell-Douglas burden
shifting. What was the worst thing that McKinney did?
One of the many things that he did was using his cell phone while driving.
That's why I'm asking what's the worst.
Yeah. And then disregarding a direct order, not from the sheriff, but from a supervisor.
Now, what's the problem with using your cell phone while you're driving?
The dangerous situation that
a lot of people
creates.
Do that, don't they?
Right, and it's illegal.
Not cops.
What does the standard operating procedure say?
With regard to that?
Yeah.
I don't have a standard operating procedure.
It's in the appendix. It says cellular telephones shall not be used for texting while the vehicle is in motion. Use of cellular telephones while driving is permitted only when it can be done safely. You can use it in lots of manners, such as the plaintiff testified he did. Was there any basis for saying that he was texting?
There was another officer with him who saw him texting and reported that. So that's what the sheriff was going with.
Let's see, where do we get that?
That's in the sheriff's affidavit.
So the sheriff is saying somebody else told him that he was texting. McKinney says, no, I was using it properly and legitimately.
Right.
What rational basis did the sheriff have for saying there was a violation of the standard operating procedure?
I believe the person that was with him was a superior officer because Mr. McKinney was a probationary officer at the time.
Well, that is that in the sheriff's affidavit?
That is not. That is not, Your Honor.
So has there ever been a case where a white officer was reported to the sheriff as having texted?
I don't have an officer for that specific violation.
Pardon?
Not for that specific violation that I have, but I do have in the affidavit in 2009, I believe.
I bet they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't report.
And the texting while driving was first raised in the litigation, right?
No.
It was not part of the sheriff's original letter terminating, was it?
It was part of it, using his cell phone while driving.
So
yes.
Where do we see that?
That should be in the termination letter.
Yeah, I agree. It should be there if that was a reason. I'm looking at the letter. Is this the letter of May 15th or May 19th?
I'm not quite sure that date.
It's not in either one.
Okay.
Let's start with the... To answer Judge Posner's question, what are the worst things he did? I assume those would have been the things that the sheriff cited in his initial letter.
Yes. And there were numerous things that concerned the sheriff. And
well, he cited three. Yes. How about the gas credit card? Would you agree that his conduct there did not actually violate Standing Operating Procedure 20? Because he physically couldn't use the gas credit card, could he?
You return home on the weekends and fuel up at the county.
Yeah, I misspoke. Yeah. He would have had to use the gas credit card because he's going to Plainfield, right? And it's more than a tank of gas, and he's not supposed to take his gas tank down to zero, down to empty, when he's driving a county unit because he might be called upon to do something, right?
I would go back to the sheriff's honest, maybe mistaken, belief.
Well, I understand that, but how honest is the belief? And I understand this is open for dispute, but let's take a look. The Standard Operating Procedure 20 says gasoline credit cards shall be used only with a county commission, that is a car, when fueling at the county facility is not available. Now, there's also evidence that other officers who went to the ILEA in Plainfield used their credit cards to charge gas in Plainfield and thereabouts. We've got evidence that a supervisor told McKinney when he went to the ILE, make sure you've got your card so you can buy gas. And we've got evidence that it would have been mathematically impossible. How could the sheriff have honestly believed that this was contrary to policy?
The sheriff's, again, honest, if the court believes mistaken, that's fine. Honest belief is that there should be enough fuel to get you to and from the ILEA.
Is the district court required to consider reality, mileage, gas tank capacity, and so on, in evaluating the honesty of that belief, which I assume the sheriff would be pretty familiar with those facts.
The appellant didn't present any evidence of that to the district court or to this court.
Any evidence of what?
Of how the mileage that it would take, of the fact that he ran out of gas or was running out of gas.
Everything I just cited to you was out of the appendix, which is out of the district court record.
Right.
What am I missing?
I do not see any mileage reports, any documents evidencing how many miles he would get per gallon, how long it would take him to get there. Those are the things that he would have to establish.
Well, the other deputy, the white people,
McKinney.
They must make mistakes of this sort.
Sure.
Also. They get fired.
He was a probationary officer.
Pardon?
And he was a probationary officer. In 2009, the sheriff also fired a probationary Caucasian officer for multiple violations. Same here, as we have a list of different things that are going wrong during your probationary year.
And what were those violations? Are they in the record?
They are. They're in the sheriff's affidavit again. Those included being late to work, allowing contact between inmates and their families and friends in court. Allowing contact between inmates and their families and friends in court, and speeding in a department vehicle without authorization.
Can we come
back? No, I'm sorry, I take that back. That's a different officer. The probationary officer was failing to respond appropriately to a personal injury accident, taking longer than required to respond to a residential alarm, failing to include a witness in a written report, failing to appropriately follow through on an investigation, failing to respond immediately to a call for assistance in the jail, failure to properly complete a jail record, and failing to obtain proper approval for overtime. And that was a Caucasian probationary merit officer, just like Mr. McKinney.
And your contention is that that's comparable to the gas credit card and submitting hours at the ILEA as he was told to by the sheriff and his assistant and other superior officers.
What I'm saying is, I go back to the sheriff believed, honestly, that these warranted termination.
You don't know what he believed.
I understand you can make that argument to a jury.
What do you know about his honesty?
Well, let me put it this way.
There's some great record or something, never lied.
Sure. I should have said it differently.
George Washington, you know.
The appellant hasn't provided any evidence that what the sheriff has said was a lie.
He's offered circumstantial evidence that it was utterly baseless.
In his opinion. All he has provided is...
Take his evidence at face value, including what he was told by other people in the department about using the gas credit card, about filing his hours, about filing monthly reports, reading the standard operating procedures, which do not say what the sheriff said. Surely the sheriff should know. And your contention is it's unreasonable to even allow an inference that these are pretextual reasons.
All he has put forward is his second guessing of the sheriff's decisions, is his speculation as the sheriff's
This is not second guessing. This is evidence that, if credited, demolishes the factual basis for the sheriff's reasons.
All the appellant has shown is that the sheriff may have been wrong, may have incorrectly.
You keep saying may be wrong. I mean, that's serious. So the sheriff has a responsible job. If he's wrong all the time, that's serious.
Well, that's.
And if he's wrong all the time, why would you think he was acting honestly?
Well, being wrong and
stupid. And he's just stupid. He's honest, but he's stupid but honest. That's what you're saying.
Being stupid, being wrong, making a mistake are not is
not
a
mistake. We're not talking about one mistake. His otherwise unblemished record. Right?
I would disagree with that.
You think he made just one mistake? The sheriff?
Oh, the sheriff. I'm sorry. I thought you were asking about McKinney.
Pardon?
I thought you were asking about McKinney.
No, I'm asking about the sheriff.
You say
he just made one mistake?
I'm not saying he did or he didn't. What I'm saying is that a mistake.
How many mistakes did he make?
I don't believe he made any mistakes.
That's what you think.
If the court feels that he
first
did.
You think he may have made a mistake. You said, of course, he may have been wrong, but he was honest. Now you're taking that back. You say he's never made a mistake, as far as you know.
No, I don't feel he was wrong, but if the court feels that he was wrong, again, that is not evidence of
pretext.
But you said
people make honest mistakes.
Yes. And this court has repeatedly held that honest mistakes do not equal meeting the legitimate expectations of the job, and they do not mean pretext for discrimination in terminating someone. And so that is all the appellant has ever shown the district court or this court, is his assertions that that's true. He's shown the court no other testimony, and I would distinguish Ortiz in that particular way because Ortiz did present deposition testimony.
Is the sheriff's domain just Fort Wayne?
Whitley County.
Pardon?
Just Whitley County.
The whole county.
Which is not Fort Wayne.
Not Fort Wayne.
What's the black population of Whitley County?
I do not know, Judge. I would, though, also, you know, we've talked about same hire, fire. Sheriff Hodges hired him. He's the same person that fired him. I understand there's case law out there saying that can be a question of fact. There's also case law finding that as a matter of law, the EEOC case that we
Why should it be
referenced.
One or the other? Why do you think that is a matter of law?
Based on the EEOC case that we've cited that was held by this court.
If you've got conflicting precedent, how should we just on the merits, why should this argument that it was the same person who made the decisions, therefore he couldn't have been biased in the later decision, why is that a rule of law as opposed to something to just argue to a jury under the circumstances?
Because of the illogical nature of the fact that someone would hire, especially in this case, somebody would hire somebody and within 9 months completely change their tune and decide to discriminate against them based on race.
Are you familiar with the stray remarks?
Yes.
Line of cases from our court?
Yes.
Which assume that if somebody, that somebody who might have said something racist a year earlier was not necessarily motivated by that same animus a year, when they act a year later, right?
Right.
Does that make any sense, or is it a matter of law? And isn't it inconsistent with the same actor inference?
Well, my understanding of stray remarks is if it's not made by a decision maker.
Assume it's made by a decision maker.
Okay. If it's made by a decision maker.
But not in connection. But not in connection with the decision.
Okay. I again would say that's different than a decision to terminate, because if you've made that decision to hire someone in the first place, there's no reason to do so if you have that bias against them. The plaintiffs certainly show no reason for the sheriff to do that in this case.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Havanen.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Mr. Begler, do you have anything further?
You're not going to get up and talk him out of it, are you?
No. I'm just going to say one thing, and that is,
thank you.
The paucity of evidence was done by the sheriff. There were no documents, no exhibits, no affidavits, nothing other than the sheriff's affidavit. Mr. McKinney presented this court with the affidavits, the documents, the actual transport orders, the Plainfield receipts, etc. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. Next.